Good evening. My name is Mitch Nichols. I'm the Community Development Director for Clark County. I'm welcoming you all to the October 23rd Surface Mining Advisory Committee Forum. We've got some folks that we're still waiting on to get here. Hopefully they'll show up, but staff members that can help in the discussion. But I want to invite everybody to come up to the table if you have something you'd like to add and speak into a microphone, pulling it as close as mine is so we get this recorded. It helps us in the minutes. With that, when you do come up and speak, it would be great if when you first speak, you'd introduce yourself, name and address for the record. That would be great. That said, I'll go ahead and get rolling. We're waiting on Ahmad Kayumi, our Public Works Director, who I think is coming, but we've got an apt second here if we need her. I have with me Michael Boyer. I'd first like to introduce you to our code enforcement officer who is doing surface mining compliance review. He's working on, we do the CUP and in community development. We monitor the CUP requirements. So Michael's been working with the mine operators and the community to follow up on complaints and also resolve and have discussions with the mine operators to make sure that we're doing everything's going along as smoothly as it can. Welcome, Ahmad. Are your ears burning?
Yes.
I'm sorry, you're the new guy.
I'm the new guy, yes.
And what was your name?
Mike Boyer.
Mike Boyer.
I'll make sure you have a card along with my cell phone number as well.
Thank you.
Great. We also have Rob Klug here. Rob is our transportation, our engineering division manager in Public Works, transportation division manager. He can address questions and talk to you about transportation, road conditions, and so forth in the areas of the surface mining operations. Ahmad Kayumi, our Public Works Director, has just joined us. Bo Stordahl is here, as always. Thank you, Bo, for coming up. Again, if you have something you'd like to add to the conversation, if you want to get involved in the decision making and the discussion, please join us at the table. That said, I'll get started with kind of a quick update on the Yakult Mountain status, because that was the last surface mining forum that we had. And just wanted to follow up with some of the improvements and changes that have occurred as a result of the work that we're all doing here and the cooperation and support of the mine operator. As you may recollect, there were a lot of concerns about the trips, the truck traffic, the noise, the blasting. We have now announcing blasting in advance so folks can prepare for that. Bo has been great about getting us that information ahead of time so we can circulate that on our website. He's also communicating that out to the area residents so they are aware of the fact that blasting is coming in the particular time it's going to be there. They've also been monitoring their traffic flow in and out of the mine operations now, and I'll let Bo talk about that a little bit to give you the specific routing that they're taking. The air quality survey that we were waiting on, that was hopefully going to be here now, is still a couple of weeks out, is what we're told. So once we get that air quality survey, we'll be happy to share that with everybody. I think what I'd like to do is send it out via email and post it on our website for everybody to review instead of waiting until another Surface Mining Advisory Committee meeting to have that discussion. We do have some community feedback. There's a copy of an email we recently received up there.
Just a little bit more, one more thing on the Yakult Mountain. So one thing also, we had heard about concerns about traffic, especially truck traffic on Kelly Road from Yakult Mountain. And Rob has done a traffic count, because one thing I wanted to find out what the percentage of the trucks versus the cars are using that roadway would be. So we have that data, and he's going to evaluate and find out what kind of trucks and what the volumes are in terms of percentage versus the vehicles. And that's going to be good information that will help us to start a dialogue with the operator and then what are the next things we need to do. And I know we had some really rough surface road conditions. Our crew have done some minor repairs, but my goal is to look at a long-term fix on that roadway and how we're going to handle that. But that's something that we need to have the dialogue and conversation with Bo and his team. But I just want to let you know we have done those counts. And as soon as we finalize those counts, we can share that information with you in terms of how many trucks and what percentage of trucks we have on that road. So I know Rob is going to be working on that one. So.
You have an estimate of when that's available?
So the counts are done. What we did is we actually did three different types of counting because we wanted to find out what sort of information we could get from what's called tube counters, which count axles, a radar counter, and also a video system called MyoVision. What we have to do is go through and actually watch the video system and compare it to the other counts, because as we're putting the systems out, we'd like to do as much automated operation as possible. We need to understand how good the system is at picking up a tractor trailer, a long truck, an individual truck and pup, whatever the case is, for giving you good counts, because we know that we have a certain number of hits as far as a tractor trailer versus a bus versus, but we want to go back and actually just truth check that and verify it to make sure that we're getting good data, because otherwise we might have the wrong answer that comes out of it.
Is it just questions along the way?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Is it just Kelly Road? Is it just Kelly Road?
So the test that we did was we did all three. I need to make sure I describe this properly. We did the MyoVision camera system at the gate of the mine, mm-hmm. and then we did all three of the different count systems actually on Kelly Road, about half a mile north of where the mine entrance is, because that was a location.
Not Gabriel, though? You haven't?
We have two MyoVision systems, and they're $5,000 a piece. And for us to process the data, for us to have it automatically processed, it was about $1,000 for us to get the 5 days' worth of data processed. So we want to make sure it's working well before we buy more of the systems and start incurring those costs. Because if it doesn't give us what we need, it isn't worth going down that path.
I get that. Do you intend, if everything works out okay, that you would meter Gabriel Road as well?
We would. I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're not intending to permanently count any of these locations. We're intending to be able to go out and spot check the counts and compare them to the truck information that's coming in out of the scales. So I have reasons why we want, for other reasons around the county, to acquire more of these counting systems. We just want to make sure that they're working well for this application.
We'll be doing more frequent checking to make sure that things are balancing out. So at this point, we don't have any plan for permanent counters.
And for us to go out there and actually set up the count station takes longer to drive out and drive back than it does to set up and take down the count station. So it's not a big laborious thing for us to do. I'm not saying no. I'm saying we have two of the devices, and we wanted to get a baseline.
Sure.
I think that we want to make sure that after we've done the analysis of the data that we collect and verify them, then see, and if they're correct, then we can expand the process later. But I think right now we're just evaluating the data and make sure that those are correct and before we expand the counting to other locations.
I think don't you have a spot north of the pit entrance?
Both, do you want to?
Can you grab that microphone and pull it over? There you go.
Is there a device north of the pit on Kelly Road? Or is the intent to, that's where it's going to be? Because to get to Gabriel Road, our loaded trucks will, the pattern is they'll turn north out of the pit and then west on Gabriel to 503, and then the empty trucks come back the other way.
Yeah.
So I think it would be assumed that every truck that turned right out of the pit would then make a left onto Gabriel.
Okay.
The challenge that we have, and this is getting way in the weeds, and I apologize, but it's a box that gets lashed to a utility pole or a light pole or something like that, and then it has a fiberglass extendable stick that goes up about 25 feet in the air with a camera that's on a fisheye lens looking down at the road in the intersection area. So the challenge is we have to find a location where we're out of the power lines, out of the overhead trees, and we still have good view of the area. Because we can't just set it up and just set it there. We have to lash it to something to keep it from being stolen. So wherever we go, we're going to be looking for a location that's going to give us the best data we can.
Great. One of the other aspects of what we do is we are a conduit for some of the community feedback that we that gets shuffled around between agencies. And for folks, when they reach out to us, we make a habit of connecting our commentary with the operators, the objective being the quickest route to a solution of any particular issue between the mine operation, involving the mine operation, is actually at the source versus us. As Rob observed, it takes us a while to get out there. And a lot of times, whatever it was that was causing the problem may not be there. One of the important things that Bo has done and the mine operators have done is ensure that the buses that are dropping and picking up students in the areas have radios in them that can communicate directly with trucks in the area. So they know what routes they can communicate their locations, the bus location, to the truck drivers that are actually coming down those roads to prepare them and let them know they're ahead of them. That's something that they did voluntarily without our prompting. That was something they felt was important in the interest of safety. They coordinated that with the school district. That's an example of something that we received complaints about that we reached out to the school district. You know, we were going to reach out to the school district, and Bo advised us this has already been taken care of. This comes to bear when, you know, the coordination of our response is really from the perspective of being able to observe the violation or the condition that's creating the problem is difficult for us because we're not out there directly. And that response time is mitigated greatly by a good coordination between the neighborhood and the mine operators. And for that reason, one of the next steps with Yakult Mountain is to reconstitute the neighborhood group that formerly existed out there. And it's, one of the responsibility for that and the CUP is pretty much in the operators' hands. As Bo previously told us, they had struggled with keeping that group together, and it kind of dissolved on its own. And
I don't think that would happen now.
Yeah, well, that's great. I'd like to offer Michael Boyer as part of that to help with reconstituting the group. So that high-value information between the neighbors and the operators and that conduit is really solid and robust. It will help in mitigating problems very quickly versus through this complaint process that we have instituted here at the county. It's just our resourcing and our location really make it difficult for us to be as responsive as we need to be in this particular case. And that's why that neighborhood group, and that's why that arrangement was added to the CUPs to try and mitigate some of that challenge. So with that, I'd like Mike to talk a little bit about some of the work that he does and the monitoring, just to give you an idea of what his days are like when he's involved with that particular aspect of his work.
Thank you, Mitch. So my name is Mike Boyer. I'm the new code enforcement officer, as Mitch has introduced me. I've been with the county for just shy of 5 months now, so I'm very much still learning my way. I have a lot to learn, and my focus really has been, first and foremost, to start building some relationships with the mine operators. Bo has been great to work with in terms of operational tours, making himself very accessible when I have questions, concerns. I also want to be very responsive to the community, so I've had a chance to meet a few of you before this meeting started, hand out my card, write down my cell phone number, make sure everybody gets that number before we leave today. But I'm out in the field all the time, and I'm happy to come meet people in person, head out to the mines as responsive as I possibly can be, and then make sure that I'm giving good, clear communication, being very transparent, and if it's not something that I'm directly responsible for in terms of monitoring the CUP and making sure it gets referred off in an appropriate manner. For those of you that want to write it down, my cell phone number is 360-836-9745, and I'll make sure I've got cards and everything out for everybody here before we all leave tonight. As of yet, I to be honest with you, I've not received a great deal of complaints or concerns, which is positive, although I'm sure it's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of potential concerns out there. And again, I just want to make myself as responsive and out there with the community as I possibly can be.
You do realize you've been the stealth officer for 5 months.
I'm sorry, sir?
Nobody knew you were here.
I can't speak to that. It's my first chance to get in front of everybody, and now that you all know who I am, I'm sure I'll be a little bit busier than I was before this meeting.
So, community feedback. You know, how is it working? How is this process working? How is what we've done with Yakult Mountain working? You know, if have we met our objectives? Have we met some of them? We still have a ways to go in some instances.
Well, I think that's true. Yes.
I have some questions.
Please.
Sure. Just some questions. I know we're anxiously awaiting the mineral content sampling. It was unfortunate that that they were delayed. It's been quite a while. Yeah. So 2 weeks, you say.
Yeah, a couple of weeks is what we were told, and that's from Southwest Clean Air.
Okay. Yeah. And I guess my questions are probably for Bo, if you're willing. Everybody recognizes that rock is very important. The inventory is necessary for infrastructure. This isn't about that. It's about being a good neighbor and making sure that that you keep the community's health issues well in mind as you conduct your operation. So I guess the testing of the rock expected soon. If it shows minerals that are harmful, moronite and silica and orionite, are you willing to cover all of your loads?
I'm doing that now. I've been doing that since our last meeting.
How I see your trucks without the covers on and loaded.
We have the potential to blow dust. So 1¼ minus, 5/8 minus, those loads are covered. If it's quarry spalls, large tracks, something like that doesn't contain dust in it, I'm not going to bother tarping those.
Mm.
So
I was just looking at this, this email that you got from
Are you saying that the loads that are coming out of Mountaintop, my trucks specifically, aren't tarped if they're hauling those products?
Well, I don't know what's in them. I see that they're loaded and they're not covered.
Okay.
We're seeing just a few. People are reporting a few covered, but I see a lot of them that aren't.
They're all covered.
Yeah.
Well, not well.
Can you give us a flavor, Bo? You said there were two specs that you were covering. The total number, is that, do those two specs represent 10%, 20%, 60% of, on average, is sort of your loads?
At least 50%, greater than 50%.
Okay, so the expectation is that more than one out of every two trucks that people see on average ought to have a cover on it?
Yep.
Okay, 5/8 minus and what else? 1¼?
1¼ minus. Screenings. Anything that has fines in the load.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, and so
and,
I
the, and we a, operate the white trucks.
I know. They have your name all over them.
Yep.
Yeah. Is there any way, I guess this question is for the county then, if somebody else comes up and gets a load at the quarry that isn't
They are not required to tarp. I can ask them to, but they have no obligation to do so.
Okay. Well, that might be something that the county might take up.
You'd certainly look at it, and especially if it's, you know, if we have a report that says that there are contaminants that would be emitted, we can ask for covers.
Okay.
That's not
okay.
All.
So we have 2 weeks to wait.
Yeah.
And I think that would be an EPA. EPA would show up and say, this must be mitigated. And how are we going to do this?
Yeah. And how would you do it? Blast blankets and pre-wetting and stuff like that?
As far as the loads, I think we'd probably need to wet the loads and tarp, combination of both.
Okay.
You know.
So if that's the case, depending on the outcome in 2 weeks, I guess a lot hinges on that, there might be different operations that you would undertake then. We would sure be interested in that. That is...
Your operations?
Yeah, like covering everything and
yeah.
wetting the loads and blast blankets and mm-hmm. stuff like that.
No, and right now there doesn't appear to be a health risk.
How do you
that's
know?
What it's being tested for.
Yeah. How do you know?
What?
How do you know? You don't know what's in it.
It's being tested now, but
yeah.
Everybody, industrial hygienists that I've talked to, they're telling me that that type of, it's a zeolite, and it's a specific woolly arionite is what the concern is. They're telling me that that doesn't exist in that type of rock formation. So
okay, well,
there isn't a standard for it in the state, so there isn't a requirement for me to test it in advance. So I can't be concerned with it right now.
Well,
that's why I'm looking for
your neighbors are. I can't underscore that enough, that your neighbors are concerned about it.
Well, I'm wondering where that concern came from. You know,
a test in one of the...
A test in somebody's home
yeah.
inside a cabinet that's, you know, 3 miles away, two and a half miles away. Mm-hmm. I don't see the correlation there. I don't see a scientist drawing a conclusion that it came from the pit.
Actually, I've submitted extensive publications about woolly arionite. I've been in contact with Southwest Washington Clean Air Agency. They sent me to a workshop in Bend for a full day with our geochemist for our group. And the EPA is very concerned about arionite. The first part of it went into all the details, mesothelioma, pleural disease, asbestosis, there's a whole list. It does take them quite a while to identify it. Quite a few pieces of machinery, it turns out, instruments. What I'd like to recommend and request, two of the EPA people that are working, that are very familiar with this sampling, Julie Robel is a toxicologist with EPA, and she was one of the speakers. I highly recommend we have her come speak to this group. Whether or not they find it. They also talked about moissanite and silica and the dangers of that. And I've submitted a lot of publications to the county in the last year over all of this. It's very, very, very easy. Go to Google it, arionite, EPA framework, and a bunch of publications that they've done based on scientific studies will come up. So
I would appreciate if you send that information to me, the contact
yeah,
information.
Yeah, I can do that. I have it right here. In fact.
So one of the challenges that we face every day in our work has to do with workplace safety. And I can whatever would be required to protect the public would also be required to protect the people that are working in
sure.
the industry.
Yeah.
And I can, you know, in my work with Bo, I understand Stordal and Sons to be a reputable company that does pay attention and prioritizes workplace safety. And from that perspective, I would think that they would be very, very supportive of making sure that adequate protection was in place, both for the public and the folks they're working with. So it's not that they're uninterested at this point. It's just that having no really firm statement from EPA, the people that are responsible for making those determinations and saying, as they have for asbestos or lead-based paints, as an example, is thou shalt not. Until that happens, we're at a standstill. Obviously, people can self-protect themselves if they choose to, if they feel there's a threat, and I encourage anyone that feels there's a threat to do so. I mean, it's not, I wouldn't wait for a decision. If you're concerned about it, then by all means take whatever action you can to protect yourselves until at least there's a decision that we can all understand.
Something I'd like to mention as well that I learned is that it never breaks down. So when it's put on playgrounds, roads, in asphalt, when that is broken up again, it becomes airborne again and is just as viable and dangerous the second time. So that was a real surprise to me that it doesn't break down at all.
Well, it could be valuable to have her come talk with us.
It would. I have four more questions.
And I'd like to just repeat, in the meantime of this sample being analyzed, we've taken action to tarp those loads.
Yep, I heard.
You've taken, what was that, Bo? You did what?
You've taken action to tarp those loads coming out of the pit.
You mean they're supposed to be tarped. They are not tarping them all. It ain't happening. I seen four of your trucks today on 503 Rock Creek Road.
Yep.
Between 7:30 and 7:45, not a one of them was tarped. I've seen very few trucks.
I've explained the products that we tarp.
Right. Well, I'm just saying I've seen very few trucks that are tarped. Very few. Not just yours, other ones as well. But I've stored all, not tarping all their loads like you say there.
I didn't say we were tarping all of them. I said we were tarping the ones that contained fines that had the potential to blow dust.
That's not correct. Because my neighbor's got his car almost sandblasted from blowing sand. I've seen blowing sand on 503. When your trucks are heading south, I'm heading north. I've been right there and seen it just blow. It looks like a big dust cloud. So I've seen it, and I'd experienced it myself. And there's other issues that I've experienced that maybe you guys might want to hear about real quick. They're not supposed to be going down Kelly Road to Rock Creek Road. Three trucks went down Kelly Road today, fully loaded, one stored all and two independents, made a right turn on Rock Creek Road, which means that they're crossing that bridge before you get to 503. That's got a 34-ton weight limit on it. They're not supposed to be doing that.
We don't have a restriction to not travel south on Kelly Road.
I'm talking about when you get to the bottom of the hill, you're not supposed to be going to the right because there's a bridge down there that's got a weight limit on it, unless your trucks are under the 34-ton limit.
Is that true?
It's posted.
If it's posted, then yes.
It's posted.
I'm
glad to go look at it.
It's not the Hyacinth Bridge.
No. This bridge is, if you're coming out of Battleground and you're heading north on 503, when you get to Rock Creek, you make a right, and you go maybe one and a half tenths of a mile, and you're going to cross this little bridge. And it's posted right there. You can't miss it. Both ways it's posted. Okay? There's a big issue also, Kelly Road and Rock Creek Road. These roads ain't designed to have these big doubles on them. A lot of trucks haul 1055. These roads ain't really designed for that. Here's the issue you got. You got these trucks this morning. I left at 6:45, went down Rock Creek Road, 14 trucks in a row, one behind another. Boom, 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 boom. I made the left, went into Battleground. I counted a total of 24 trucks. I realized that there's a deal you can get 30 per hour, so they say. But I counted 24, and they're all bunching up. When they get to Rock Creek Road and Kelly Road, if you got a motorhome or a pickup pulling a trailer, you can't make that right turn. They turn right in front of you. They've done it to me. They've done it to other people. And they won't stop. They won't give you an inch. So I won't give them an inch. I sit there. You know, we have just as much right to be on the road as all these trucks do. And don't get me wrong, I'm not against trucks, but they got to use a little bit of common sense. If they see a vehicle sitting there, the independents usually will wait. There's a few that don't, but for the most part, most of the independents will wait if you're sitting to make a right or left, and they'll let you go. But Stordahl, with these big double trains, with those trains, those guys usually don't wait, Bo.
Which intersection? Can you say it again?
Rock Creek and Kelly Road, right on the corner, down at the bottom of the hill.
So Kelly and Lucia Falls?
Kelly, Lucia Falls, same one. Yes, exactly.
Just to make sure.
And if you're sitting there, and it's happened to me a lot, and it's happened to a lot of people. If you're sitting there and you see a truck coming, you're going to wait for the truck because you know he's going to turn left. And if you want to go left, you don't want to turn in front of him. Which is, they turn in front of you, but a lot of times, that corner, if anybody's familiar with that corner, CenturyLink's got all their control boxes right there. And CenturyLink's out there all the time. They were out there again today. They're out there all the time. And when these big, when these trucks come down through there with a truck and two trailers, I realize they got to swing kind of wide to make that corner. But if there's somebody sitting there, if you're in a motorhome or a truck with a pickup or a camper or whatever, you can't back up because there's really three or four vehicles behind you. So you're kind of stuck in the, you know, you're dead in the water.
I didn't catch your name, but Rob just showed me the restriction on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 34 ton for a tandem for that's, emergency vehicles.
That's 34, yes. But the county also, and you can check with the county on this, the county has advised me and other people that that is 34 ton per tandem. That's correct. But there's also a restriction for Class A and Class B vehicles.
But our tandems don't exceed like 43,000 pounds.
They're not supposed to.
Right.
I'm not going to say they don't, but they're not supposed to. I understand that. But the issue of it is when these guys come down Kelly Road, those two guys that came down there today, just ahead of your truck, their brakes were smoking.
Yeah, it's a steep.
They were smoking. When these guys go by 299th, Sullivan Drive, 299th, they're on the throttle, and by then they're on their Jake brake, and it's too late. They're not going to slow down. They're not going to have there's no way they're going to have enough time to slow down when they get to the bottom. One of your trucks has already went off, and there's been a couple other ones that's went off. And my fear is if my wife or my kids or my granddaughter or anybody in this room, you're driving north or south on Lucia Falls, and one of those trucks come barreling down that hill and he can't stop, you're not going to see him. He's going to hit you, and somebody's going to get either seriously hurt or killed. And that's, you know, that can't happen. I'm sorry. It just can't happen.
So that's sort of is inconsistent with coming out of the mine, turning left, going to Gabriel.
Loaded, we come out and we
and
turn
the empties
right.
Go back.
Empty come back. Our truck specifically, unless we have unless there's an issue on Gabriel Road, an accident or something like that, our trucks are routed to turn right out of the pit, left on Gabriel to 503, empty coming back, Lucia Falls to Kelly. There may be a rare occasion where we turn left coming out of the pit because we have a delivery that requires us to go that way rather than going making the big loop, coming back around. But we don't dictate drive and trade which direction they go.
Mm-hmm.
We can't.
Yeah.
So
this isn't all just about you. They're, you know, independence and they're a concern as well. So that would be directed to you guys.
And I'll mention again that intersection, Kelly and Lucia Falls, isn't adequate.
No.
It's very steep. And we are on the hook to improve that. Once right-of-way is obtained by the county, because it's all property or private property owners around there, the county doesn't own the right-of-way necessary for the improvements. So I've already agreed to make those improvements once the right-of-way is obtained.
Well, that particular intersection is really bad if the trucks are coming in, because they all come in Lucia Falls, Rock Creek Road, every one of them. They come in that way. They come across Tyson Bridge a lot of times, too, out of Battleground. I've seen them come up that way. I'm all over the place. And I see every place I go, I see which way they're coming and going every day. And that intersection is a bad intersection.
No, it needs widened. It needs maybe even a climbing lane once the truck's loaded coming down.
My main concern is I don't want to see anybody get hurt or killed at that intersection. That's what.
Well, none of us do.
No, I know you don't.
You know, truly, one of the benefits of this in this process is an opportunity for us to get information like this and to try and find a way to incorporate it in decision making, in the CUP process, in the contracting process, just to ensure that we mitigate that. And we think about not just mitigating for a point in time. If you look back at the other CUPs, there was a lot of emphasis placed on the prevailing conditions at the time of the permit. But if you think about the industry itself, it can last for a century in some cases. And being mindful of the impacts and the evolution of the impacts is something that we have to contemplate as we go forward in our in our review processes. So this is all valuable information for us to have. The questions that we're getting, the feedback, the resources that we're reaching out to bring information to us can all help really set us up for a successfully operated, you know, rock industry in the county, but at the same time, one that is really, really considerate and mindful of the impacts on the environment and the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Right.
So just a couple more questions, and they're sort of related. Do you count the truckloads that come from the mountaintop and supply rock to Daybreak as
yes.
part of your count?
Yes.
You do?
Yep.
Okay. I'm less well versed about Livingston Mountain, but I spoke with somebody at DNR who indicated that Livingston is just about done,
mm-hmm.
And they have an allocation of truck trips too. And I think I heard you say last time we met that you were hoping to combine those and have that added to what's allowed out of Yakult Mountain. Is that true?
I didn't say that.
Well, do you want to try to combine them?
I don't think I have that opportunity without going through the process.
Would that be a CUP revision?
Yes, it would. Right now, the only CUP application that we have is for use of a driveway on the county side of the quarry.
Say that again?
Is the use of the existing driveway that comes out of the Livingston Quarry, our side of it, that we lease from DNR. So that driveway is a lot safer to use for the trucks, and it's one that's been in use for forever since that other side opened up. So,
are you going to apply for additional trucks?
I think that the loads need to go somewhere, because when Livingston's out of rock and those trip limits no longer exist, the demand is still there, and that's why Mountaintop saw the flux in demand when Livingston was shut down for 6 months. You know, because people need the rock, and those loads aren't allocated to other rock pits. You know, so the demand's there, and that's why the pit's busy.
Will you be applying?
We're out of microphones. Mr. Shaw. I'm gonna take and try and repeat what you're saying so we get it on the record.
If you want to sit,
if you want to come join us, we got a microphone up here for you. Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
I'm a great believer in the record, as the county staff knows.
Absolutely.
So I'm Greg Shaw. Bo and I talked about this the other day. The CUP designation of the number of loaded trips allowed out of a quarry has nothing to do with the allocation of production quotas for the industry. It has only to do with what a hearing examiner decided was an appropriate level of activity for the neighborhood. It's a conditional use permit. It is a normally not permitted use, which is allowed under certain conditions. In Livingston, without going through all the details, the county stateside was allocated 70 trips with a 70-trip short-term peak, which has been much debated over the years. And Livingston Mountain Quarry, owned by Tower Rock, was allocated 95 trips. That was increased from 16 trips to 95 because a crusher was authorized for use on Livingston Mountain Quarry. There is no crusher on Livingston Mountain Quarry now. One could argue that the limit coming out of Livingston Mountain Quarry really ought to be 16 trips. But now we're getting into the arcane matters of the CUP and the hearing examiners. The main point is, the trip limits are not a quota for the industry. They are the maximum number of trips that a hearing examiner has decided is appropriate for that area. If any operator, I won't single out Mr. Stordahl, if any operator has a pit and he wants to run trips, he has to get a hearing examiner to say how many trips can come out of that. Mr. Stordahl, like any operator under the various surface mining laws and the CUP hearing examiner process can apply under certain conditions to change the terms of a CUP. There is not a possibility in the law to transfer trips from one pit to another pit. It just doesn't work that way. That's not how the CUP process works. And I defer to Mitch and Ahmad and others to talk about that, but I've read this stuff backwards and forwards, and that's just not how it goes. You can't transfer trips. It shouldn't be thought about that way. It should be thought about what is the appropriate level of trips coming out of any particular pit.
And that was the basis for the question. If there is an application for a revision to the CUP to add trips, then that burdens this neighborhood even more. And they're about to hear, as maybe about to hear, as far as truck traffic and.
Yeah, please. And I wasn't making a suggestion that when Livingston's gone, the county should just shift those load counts. That's not.
Yeah, it was really, are you going to ask to have more trips added to Livingston, I mean to Yakult Mountain?
The only reason I would do that is if I felt that the demand for aggregates in Clark County was no longer being met by the limitations up there. And in order for that to be possible, I would have to prove to a hearings examiner that I don't have adverse impacts on intersections, the roadways are adequate. It'd be a very tough sell. But if the only way that I would do that is if I felt the demand wasn't being met by the current restrictions on the pit.
Do you anticipate that that's going to be the case?
I hope not. But with rock pits drying up, the source is becoming limited to one location in the county. You know, right now, we fortunately have Daybreak, where in the wintertime we can stuff that pit full and create some of, or an opportunity for the demand to come off of the hill and be bought at the Daybreak pit.
But without that. That counts, though, per your last quest or last.
It counts
answer.
On the way in. It doesn't count on the way out of Daybreak. See? So when I'm trucking it to Daybreak, it counts as a trip out of Mountaintop. But once it's sold at Daybreak, that's not a trip out of Mountaintop.
Yeah. Okay.
I only have one last thing to say, and then I'm going to go back to my chair so I'm not on this microphone. There's an important issue here. It doesn't have anything to do with Bo or his pits or anybody else's pits. It's an appropriate issue for the county in this forum, to talk about, which is that the CUP process is completely screwed up, and the laws, the surface mining laws, are completely screwed up. There's a state surface mining act. There's a county surface mining act. Two-thirds of anything anybody talks about is grandfathered one way or another, and nobody except an attorney can figure it out. And frankly speaking, the county attorneys are the least capable of anybody in sorting it out. It's a little opinion there. But the fact is we need to fix the rules. It is not clear who can open a CUP for review. I mean, I'm still not convinced that the contract for Livingston, which authorizes the review to be opened to decide the issue of how many trips can come out, I'm not convinced that anybody has standing to ask that under the law. I don't think that's part of either the hearing examiner process or the Surface Mining Act as it applies to those quarries. Those are all issues. This needs to be crystal clear. This should not be ambiguous. Your question is a really good question, but it should not be ambiguous. It should be in the law. It should be in the rules that the hearing examiners have when they issue their findings. And the ambiguity has made his life difficult, and I'm sympathetic in a certain way, but it's made the community's life even worse because the people in the community generally don't have any understanding of how these processes have worked. And honestly, they haven't worked honestly over the last 10 years. It should be clear who has standing to ask for a review of the conditions under which a quarry operates. I'm not saying they should be unlimited. I think they should only be very clearly defined. Who has the right to ask a hearing examiner to review something? Who has the right to ask for a new permit? And when the heck does a conditional use permit end? I asked Mr. Nichols' predecessor, and I've asked him before we knew each other very well in writing several times, why don't you just cancel the CUP on Livingston Quarry and let's be done with it? I believe you have the authority to do that, but it doesn't say that anywhere. There's no sunset provision on a CUP. It goes on forever. Contracts are more or less defined by the contract terms, although the county doesn't seem inclined to enforce any of its contract provisions. But there is no sunset provision for a CUP, and there is no process for me to petition the hearing examiner, for example, to close the Livingston CUP. These things need to be fixed, and it needs to be absolutely, totally transparent. Shouldn't be a question. I'm finished.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw.
I have a question for Bo. You can help me out with this. So at night, it's like a stadium up there at the quarry. I mean, it is so brightly lit up. Okay. And it was about a third of the nights until Livingston closed. And then it was a lot and often and even fully this weekend. Can you tell us what's going on?
What do you mean
there?
By a stadium?
It's the place is lit up brighter than a stadium. The entire sky is lit up from the quarry. Can you tell us? It seems like it's outside of operating hours. Can you tell us what's going on at the quarry that's picked up since Livingston's closed?
There hasn't been any drastic changes up there, to my knowledge. I will ask if the lights are just simply being left on.
Oh, dear.
I can assure you we're not operating at night. I can guarantee you that, but I will make a call and find out why the lights are on.
And then they're off at the very wee hours of the morning.
The lights are off in the morning when daylight comes?
Mm-hmm.
Naturally.
No, I mean before daylight, as if when the shift ends.
We are not operating up there at night. I can guarantee you that.
Thank you for answering the question.
Okay, we still have to have a little bit of time for Livingston,
sure,
if you don't mind.
Sure, I'll be fast. Do you have jetty stone in your inventory?
We have the potential to produce jetty stone.
Yeah. Are you expecting to mine that soon?
We're mining it now, but you create jetty stone with your drill pattern to get the size that you're desiring. But we're not producing jetty stone now, no.
Okay. And then my last question is, you know, the covenant that said something about no expansion for a decade? No, you don't know that?
No expansion for a decade? That's
yeah,
that's
you would
the
not.
It says.
No,
I think we're talking about the mining overlay, right?
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Okay, maybe I'm using the wrong terms.
The covenant says I won't mine that expanded parcel for a period of 10 years, is what
okay.
it says.
That's what it said. Okay. And so my question is, why did you apply for the ability to do that far in advance?
I think I discussed that during the hearing, the appeal hearing, and explained that position well. It's part of the permit process, and it includes mining. I would have to go through the same exact process again 10-plus years from now that I'm going through now just to store the dirt there, the same permitting process. And just in the nature of efficiency, that doesn't make any sense to me.
If I can just mention, the science is ever evolving on diagnosing what is up there, on identifying it. Plus, the scientists need time to analyze the landslide potential. That is documented on the Washington State DNR, and it's a little hard to find on Clark GIS, but it's there. The historic landslides below there, and what a geotechnical engineer has told us is that it does not just affect the mountain below you, the people, the families, and the river down below you. It also affects the slopes, for example, up above Hantwick Trail.
So the
process. We need time to study this.
The process for storing dirt, as I said, is the same process for mining. So with that comes an archaeological study, a slope stability study that we are required to do before.
Were those done originally?
On that property? No. We didn't own it, and we weren't making an application to expand onto it. But those studies are being done now.
How about the environmental studies? The SEP?
SEPA?
Yeah.
SEPA was done on the original permitted area. And it will be required for the expanded area. It's part of the process. It's the same process.
And you said you're undertaking that now?
Archaeological, slope stability, infiltration. We have to check all those boxes before we can even submit our application.
So do you have to have a permit just to put overlay material on there?
Yes.
A mining permit?
Yes. I have to expand the original permit to cover the areas that I would be disturbing.
I have a question.
The question was, do you have to have a mining permit to move the overburden? And the county said pretty clearly, which is what you appealed, that in their view, the answer was no. So what makes the answer yes?
I'll try to be more clear. The permit has to be expanded before I can store dirt there. It does not have to include mining, that application. But all of the studies that I'm doing now, I would have to do whether or not I was mining there to begin with, because I'm storing overburden on a new area outside of the original permit where erosion control, slope stability, potential archaeological impacts could exist just by storing the dirt there.
You don't leave, you close, to a certain extent, the opportunity, as people have talked about, that when you can mine, that the permit for mining will include another 9+ years of information, both about the community and the science and technology.
And we talked about this at the last meeting, but when science evolves, there are amendments to the Department of Ecology's requirements for a stormwater pollution prevention plan. Southwest Clean Air, should science say it's necessary, will impose new standards that I'll have to meet.
We just heard
but the conditional
length by Mr. Shaw that there are the conditional use permit, which is really the mechanism that puts a lot of these potential safeguards in the community. The conditional use permit, as near as anybody can tell, nobody even knows how to open the darn thing up again. And so
a conditional use permit wouldn't,
locking it 9 years in advance seems ludicrous.
So the standards by the regulatory agencies that monitor the pits update their standards all the time. We get new updates of things that are required to do when science evolves. They'll update what their regulations are. That happens. It
takes
now,
time.
Of course, but once it's understood, that's when it's implemented in my requirements.
Have there been any amendments to the current conditional use permit?
Not conditional use permit, because that's not discussing the regulatory standards that you guys are talking about, you know, slope stability and dust testing and water quality. And but there are updates all the time through Department of Ecology updating their standards when science evolves.
I'd like to get to this last
Thanks.
One, Yakult Mountain, and then
I have a question related to water quality. I recall some months ago when there were some testimony before the council that water quality came up and that there was a good deal of sediment coming from the site. So I wonder if there's been improvements there, if there's been additional monitoring, or what's the status of sediment runoff from the site?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe those comments came before the Hall Road was paved up there, and there was a concern that with the gravel roads being near a creek up there, that stormwater runoff had the potential to discharge into that creek. Since then, the Hall Road's been paved, so there isn't a sediment runoff concern at that location.
Great. Okay. Thank you all. So let's move on to Livingston Mountain, the contract. I've got Ahmad Kayumi has joined us tonight to talk about the Public Works Department's responsibility for monitoring and managing the contract. So,
So I just a point of clarification, because there was a recent amendment that was done by council, and that's the operating contract that the county has with the applicant who's operating the site. So one thing I want to just make sure clear understanding is that it's a separation. The Public Works has been designated by council to manage the contract, and anything that's regulatory and related to like conditional use permits, enforcement, that's going to be done by Mitch's group. So that, just want to make sure that there is a clear separation of that. Within that contract that was adopted by council, there's certain requirements that we're supposed to do as Public Works and also the operator. Those include keeping track of the truckloads, the trips that are out there. So Bo's going to be providing that information, and we'll find a way to make sure that's appropriately distributed for the public and what we can share, what we cannot share. The other thing is within that, there is also a requirement if there is a peak, it has to be requested by the operator by Friday, which we'll evaluate and let him know if he can do that or not. So those are the couple of major things that we, for Public Works perspective, that we manage. But anything related to code enforcement, make sure code compliance, or conditional use permit requirements, that's going to be done by Mike and Mitch's team. So I just want to make sure that's just a really abbreviated version of what Public Works relationships are related to enforcement or managing that contract.
Great. Do we have any questions? Yes, come on up. Bo, can you share your microphone? Thank you.
Hi, John Brewer. I live on Northeast 53rd Street, about 90 feet from the Hall Route. I'm just wondering where the county derives authority to amend the terms of a conditional use permit by contract.
I don't think there was... there was already a contract before that was approved by council. So the county council, as my understanding, is they have the authority to approve, deny, or amend contracts.
Yes, but the number of trips, truck trips, is determined by the terms of a conditional use permit. And that cannot be amended by a contract.
The trips that are outlined in the contract was already part of the previous contract.
No, I'm sorry. That's not correct. The trip counts limits are in the conditional use permit.
The portion that's part of conditional use permit is the, my understanding is the Livingston Mountain, which is under the Tower Rock, and that's the one that's part of the conditional use permit, not on the one on the county side.
They both have an individual conditional use permit. There are two. And one of the issues is that the operator wants to combine them into one.
I think that's not part of what the contract says or the amended contract says. That has to be done through a conditional use permit process, which has to go through its own.
Agreed. So where does this new limit for number of trucks in the contract come from? Where's the authority for that? That's my question.
I think it was supposed to be clarification of the existing language in the current CUP is really what the scope of that is limited to. Yep. So one CUP at Livingston Quarry allowed potentially up to 140 loads. The Tower Mountain or the Livingston Mountain Quarry owned by Tower Rock, that had 95 loads allocated to it. The question in the application that you're referring to and contract that it's contemplating is, can those 95 loads, A, be combined with one operator, and B, if they're combined, can those loads exit the county gate?
I thought we already decided that years ago.
I don't believe we did.
I think the first annual revision is that because you could use their driveways.
And then I agree with what Bo just said. There was a lot of ambiguity and an original approval, so the amendment attempted to do some of it, but there's still additional clarification that needs to be done, and I think the understanding is that has to be done through CUP process, not a conditional use permit.
In front of a hearings examiner.
So the intent wasn't to change anything, it was just to clarify the CUP terms.
Yes, and in terms of the what the previous trips were and how they operated, and there was a lot of ambiguity. So right now, the site that's owned by the county and had the 70 trips, which we're allowing the operator to continue to use through that amended contract, but any further clarification or addition to trips has to be done through them, another conditional use of permit process and clarification by the hearing examiner.
Right, and I guess one follow-up question from Mitch is, from what you said earlier, the only CUP application you have in front of you was to decide whether we could use the driveway. That's not what the contract said. The contract said we need clarification on whether we can combine the trips. So they didn't apply for the clarification that the contract called for.
So I can't speculate as to the intent as to why we haven't received an application for the trips. What we have received is an application just to utilize a driveway, the safer driveway on our side of the pit.
I think if you look at the first annual review, that was established after in like 2010.
After the mining activity stopped. I mean, that's so. Otherwise, we would just close that and reclaim it. So what this does is give us an opportunity to allow them to continue to move rock out of their side of the quarry through our driveway, essentially, and not move their scale house and the other things that are set up there to give them that advantage and minimize the impact on the other side of the quarry.
I don't want to monopolize the process here, but I have just one last question, and maybe Bo knows the answer to this. If why are we going to such effort and expense to maintain trip accounts when there isn't product there to fill those trucks? I mean, how long is it going to take to wipe out that stockpile? That's maybe 10,000 trucks total?
Stockpile?
Yeah. No. Well, that's even less, right? The stockpile's the major resource there now.
Are you talking about the knob of resource that's left to be?
Yeah, that's like 25,000 tons or something, right? Right, and the stockpile, I saw the estimate during the stop work order was like 300,000 tons.
So if you're referring to the inventory that's physically on site,
right,
that's product owned by
Tappany. I understand that. Yeah.
Right. Sorry. So what's left, the majority of what's left to mine is on the Livingston Mountain Quarry, and the state-owned parcel, that 20-acre piece is being utilized right now to process Livingston Mountain Quarry material and stage for stockpiling. It's market-driven, but I estimate less than a year left of mining on that side, and then there's a small resource left to mine on the state side that will follow. So not much longer.
Right. It's
so, thanks. So there are going to be more trucks required just to sell the stockpile than to mine anything else, right?
Yes, the trips are utilized of the sale of the finished product.
And, you know, so with 300,000 tons starting, what is that, 10,000 trucks, 30 tons apiece? Okay, so we've already done 20% of that in just 2 months. You've done 2,000 trucks.
I didn't add them up, but I'm sure it's close. No, I'm in agreement with you. There's not much left there to do.
So just let me repeat the question. Why all the effort and expense over defending these truck counts when we don't need them?
I think we need the daily trip counts to feed the market. At least that's mighty. The concern I have is that there's not enough without the 70 and then the peak 70 and potentially up to it would be 25 more after we get the determination that is what the county needs to meet the demand of aggregate. And
okay, well, I've been following the numbers, and I haven't seen a day when you've gone over 95 plus 70 yet.
I think the busiest that pit's been since we opened back up was like 128 loads or something like that. Yeah. But again, Greg, I don't...
I show 116 here, Bill.
Well, we've been open for longer than that.
Oh, okay.
116 probably is the high.
No, I think we eclipsed 120 at some point. Okay. But again, I don't control that demand. I'm open for business, and I'm always anticipating more than that. But by the time the pit opened back up, the heart of the construction season was pretty much over, you know. So, but I would say less than 2% of these trips are actually my trucks, and those are the only ones that I know might be showing up to the pit. You know, I open up the gate, and I'm open for business. I don't control these numbers.
No, I understand that.
Right. So I know the need's going to be there, because prior to the shutdown, we were at 235 a day. We were shutting the pit down. So I know that there's a need for it in the county, but that's why our effort exists today, is because those load counts being there and available to the county are important, in my opinion.
For a little while longer, right?
Yeah, it's okay. Not going to last much longer.
All right, but thanks.
Thank you.
Sir.
There are very few people here from Livingston, so it's a very good question about why the pursuit for the revision of the load counts at Livingston Quarry and Tower Rock, unfortunately, is not represented here, which represents another problem. Why did the county let a contract and then amend it and extend it to Tower Rock when Tower Rock has never actually mined Livingston Quarry? You don't have a contract with Mr. Stordahl and Stordahl and Sons. You have a contract with Tower Rock. Why is that? Well, one of the things I've discovered in doing the research is that Tower Rock happens to have a $6 million promissory note, which is secured by the operation at Livingston Quarry. If operation at Livingston Quarry ceases, there's no collateral other than $197,000, which is the value of that property, according to the assessor. The collateral for that loan is the rent, which is the proceeds that Mr. Stordahl pays to Mr. Tappany's company under the contract, which is recorded in the county. These are all public records. If the contract goes away, if the truck ceases operating, what's the bank going to say? There's no rent coming in to sustain that $6 million loan. And I don't know how much he owes.
What loan are you referring to?
There's a deed of trust recorded downstairs on the second floor in the auditor's office. It was signed 2 months after the stop work order started with Regent Pacific Bank in California, where Tower Rock included a $6 million promissory note in addition to whatever other money may have been borrowed on that note, and secured it by the property of the Livingston Mountain Quarry, those 40 acres, and the rent, which is what Mr. Stordahl's company pays to Tower Rock. If there's no operation, there's a $6 million promissory note secured by a $197,000 piece of property, which is not then producing money. My observation is that one explanation for this is we got to keep this thing going, or else Tower Rock has got a big financial problem. I'm not making an accusation. I'm just saying what the public records say. In this county, in this state, you have to record deeds of trust when you secure property against a loan. There are three promissory notes down there which say that Tower Rock has asserted that it owns all of the mineral rights to the Livingston Mountain property. In fact, it doesn't own the mineral rights to Livingston Mountain Quarry property. Those rights are owned by the State Schools Trust, Scientific School Trust. Just as the Livingston Quarry is on State K-12 trust land, the mineral rights on the Livingston Mountain Quarry are owned by the State Scientific School Trust. Money given by the federal government to the state at the time of statehood. And those rights by law, both federal and state law, have to be retained. They cannot be forfeited by the state, and they cannot be relinquished to another person without compensation to the State Scientific School Trust. It's a little bit arcane, but the bottom line is this. The federal government basically set up a trust for Washington State University, which is under the definition of the law, the scientific school in the state of Washington. DNR is struggling mightily right now trying to figure out what to do, because it's in 100 years, they've got 100,000 acres of land that belong to that trust, including the Livingston Mountain Quarry, and they've not collected one dime. Tower Rock has been profiting from that. Mr. Stordahl's been running his operation from that on rock that they don't own. It's owned by the State Scientific School Trust. It's not for me to solve that problem. I only was pointed to it by some people at the state, and I've done a lot of research. It's backed up by a title company that I hired to go through the records I couldn't find. I've been through all the state auditor records here in this building. I've been through the state archives files. I have all the land records from statehood to today for that property. Those mineral rights are owned by the state. that's a problem. And to me, it suggests a good reason why people are fighting to keep this thing dragged out, why every deadline has been met at the last minute by Tower Rock, why they're fighting to keep a truck trip out there, why they fought to keep the deadline way out to 2021, 2022, why they fought to extend the contract. This isn't Mr. Stordahl's issue. Mr. Stordahl is an operator. He said to me.
Well, I'm a big part of the reason why those dates were determined. I have to be. Yeah, I have obligations beyond mining that
all
I need time to do.
I'm not saying that you're responsible for the ownership of the asset. I mean, you have a contract to produce rock on a site, that I don't want to taint you with what I'm saying about the ownership of the rock. It's just that. Tower Rock is in the middle of this, and it's never made sense to me and other people on Livingston Quarry why Tower Rock is involved in this. Mr. Stordahl and his company mined this pit from the day it opened on 15 April 2013 to today. Tower Rock has never mined that property. Tower Rock, I think, did a little bit of mining. You know better than I do before the.
And I can explain why they're involved, and why the same reason that the county is even involved is there was a lease that was agreed to mine that 20-acre DNR-owned parcel. The county entered that lease with them. That lease extended into 2027. The county put that lease out to bid. Tappany was the only contractor that responded to it, so they took over that lease from the county with obligations to DNR. And then Tappany subleased that to me at a later date, and it's unique, and it sounds convoluted, but it's just that simple, that an operator is in there with obligations to DNR and Clark County and Tower Rock Products, and that's why they're involved in it, is because I didn't bid on it when the RFP came out through Clark County.
So my question is about you. My question is, why is Tower Rock in
there? Yeah, and that's why, because they were the only bidder on the.
Yeah, but why did they bid for it if they didn't intend to mine it?
I think they did.
And they've never mined
it. What we do isn't very easy, and they had minimum obligations, and I'm not going to speculate on their financial decisions or why they did it, but there are financial obligations of being in there, and maybe they thought it was easier for me to produce those numbers and meet those minimums than they were having success doing themselves. I won't speculate further than that. But.
I mean, my observation is just that it served as sort of a financial instrument for Tower Rock. It hasn't served. Tower Rock is not a mining company in this instance. It's, it's running a financial instrument. And my observation is that the longer it goes on, the longer that financial instrument is viable. And it's just my observation. We're off the topic here, but it goes to the contract, though. The contract is messed up. There's not a clear settlement date. I mean, a clear end date. It doesn't say this contract expires on such and such a date. It doesn't say how much money Tower Rock has to pay to the county. Those numbers, it says everything that's not in the amendment is left unchanged from the original contract. The original contract financial terms expired in 2016, a year before the actual contract expired, which is not understandable, but that's just the way the documents are. And they didn't correct it. And I pointed out to them, and the county didn't correct it. The question about the referral for a CUP review is a problem. Tower Rock made the application a day late. They failed to meet the contract. The contract said it had to be in 30 days after the lifting of the stop work order. It was sent in the next day. Leanne Bremer, who's the attorney for Tower Rock, in her submission that she put in on the 24th, said it was due on the 23rd. By her own admission, Tower Rock missed the deadline. The county understands the responsibility of deadlines. They lost a growth management appeal in the Appellate Court of Washington the last month because the attorneys over here didn't serve the papers on time. You know, dates are important in contracts. The county ought to be interpreting that. The point that was made earlier, they've applied for the wrong thing. The contract says tower will pursue a review of the CUP, and that means the CUP 2009-0004, which is the Livingston Quarry CUP. And it says it will be expressly limited to the question of whether or not the loads can be combined between the two things. And that's not the application that was put in. I was at the pre-app. The application they've applied for is something completely different. It says they want the right to run Livingston trucks out of the gate. They have the right to run trips out because there's a road maintenance agreement that specifies that the trucks have to go out the gate because that's how Ahmad and the county get the money to go into the road fund to repair the roads. And that specifies that it has to go through the gate, so there's an accounting. It has to go through common scale so they can get the numbers. So there's not a question about whether or not trucks can go through the gate. They have to go through the gate by the contract.
And that's my argument, Greg. I mean, that's
but it doesn't have anything to do with joining the load limits.
There's a different interpretation on the subject. I get frustrated with it, but that my interpretation was we can go out the gate. But that's what a hearings examiner, I was told a hearings examiner has to determine.
Yeah, but that's not the thing that's in the contract. The contract says they can only appeal to the hearing examiner for an opinion, not to change the CUP, but for an opinion of whether that CUP authorizes those trucks to be combined in total with the trucks from the private side. So they've applied for the wrong thing, and they missed the deadline. So there shouldn't even be an appeal. And according to the contract, if they don't make that appeal, then they are not entitled to peak trips. So that's the bottom line. It shouldn't even be a hearing. I mean, honestly, the application should not be accepted. Mr. Stordahl's been through an appeal process on an application that wasn't accepted. In this case, I think it's pretty clear that they missed the contract terms, which are limiting. Even they're more limiting than what's in the CUP. So I've said my piece. But the attorneys in Clark County don't seem capable of reading the contracts that they wrote themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Well, there's a lot of questions.
So I want to say just one last thing, though, yes. And I'm serious about this, is how many people are here from Livingston? Just a few. I mean, how many people live on Livingston? Like, there are like 5,000 people live on Livingston Mountain. I don't think anybody knew about it. I think there was confusion about whether this was a Yakult meeting or a Livingston meeting, and I think there's no commonality in how notice is provided, and people, supposedly it was on, I get it wrong. My children abuse me with humor about not knowing whether it's next door or back door or front door. It's one of those apps, supposedly, it's on. And supposedly, there's something in the reflector. But that's not notifying the community. We haven't had any meeting about Livingston Quarry in a decade. And everybody should have known about it. You would have had 100 people here if people had known about it. It's not like people aren't interested. I get emails every day from more than a dozen people. I don't know, John probably, some of the other people here probably get emails and Facebooks about these issues all the time. We need a meeting where the Livingston people are represented.
Did anyone see it in the Columbian?
Not everybody subscribes to the Columbian. I have to echo. My wife and I, for the last few months, have been looking for when this next SMAC meeting was going to be.
Right.
I think we even emailed you, Mitch.
You did.
Got no answer.
Sorry.
Well, that, it happens. But we looked everywhere. So I think a lot of Yakult interested people aren't here for the very same reason. I expected.
I'm not dumping on you. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And I'm not either. I'm just saying the communication.
The county's got a public participation problem in a big way. And as you all know, Prepsil Neighborhood Association has been disassociated. So I guess the county doesn't feel any obligation to notify the 5,000 households in Prepsil or something. But,
so what are some of the venues that you would like to see, make sure that we have participation or ways that we contribute, make sure that some of this information is distributed, or some of the venues that you subscribe or know of that we don't know or we should be, so that they'll help you guys out.
Honestly, it's a problem in the county. The circulation of the Columbian is like 20,000 or something. I mean, it's a tiny paper, really.
But that's why I'm asking that. We'd like to know your input, like some of the venues that you subscribe or see on check on a regular basis that we could make sure, like one of them, you know, like is it Facebook or is it other faces?
That's the only thing we can figure out.
In the beginning, we were told it was an email list that we would be notified, and that hasn't been happening.
Or at least posted on, there's a website for this group.
Yes.
And It wasn't there until just a few days ago.
I mean, not to be flip about it, but, you know, the county, shouldn't say you all, not polite. The county is not spending money on newsletters for the Prepsville Neighborhood Association. You got some money in the kitty. We had the largest participation in a neighborhood association meeting we ever had last month, and the way we got that is four or five of us paid out our own money, and we bought postcards. We got printed on VistaPrint, and my wife and I and a couple other people sat there, and we put stamps on, I don't know what it was, like 1,500 postcards. And we got the largest participation in any neighborhood meeting that we've ever had.
Direct mail.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's been one of the...
You have those lists, and like I say, you're not spending the money on the newsletter, so you could spend it on that for this.
It's not just announcing these meetings. When you started out talking about the new communication on notifying about blasting, that was the first time I've ever heard that. And... Why, you know, we've been going to these SMAC meetings, every one of them you've had this year. How would we have known about the blasting notifications?
I said that was the very first meeting that we had, that I had created a email address for Mountaintop Quarry, and the email address is mountaintop@stordahl.com. Very first meeting we had.
Okay. What do we do?
You send an email and request notification prior to blasting. It's that simple. You'll get a phone call from an employee of ours that will call you and say, we'll be blasting tomorrow between 3 and 5 p.m.
What's the email again?
For Mountaintop, it's mountaintop@stordahl.com.
And you just place that in the subject line, blasting schedule?
Yeah, and do us a favor and let us know a good number to reach you at and where you live. And
again, to be fair, they're on Mitch's website, but... And that's another thing I say. It's sort of hard to find it. I mean, I spend my life living on your website, but it's two layers down. You got to go to departments, to community development, to surface mining, to the quarry. I mean, it's four layers down, maybe five layers down. It would be nice if some of those things were like easier to find.
Okay.
Well, we could probably create like upcoming events and what is.
And maybe in addition to the things that you're doing, I'm sure each group would be more than happy to give you a group email, and you could do it directly.
Yeah, we've got a bunch of them, but yeah, that would be great. Any group emails we can get, that'd be wonderful. As with all businesses, we're resource strapped right now. We do have a large obligation to work on our permitted work. The people that pay for our permitting services take up a huge amount of our resourcing, so finding time for focusing on things that are not revenue generators for us or fee-based work that is time sensitive is we have to be careful how we allocate resources to that. So we are we've been done some hiring. We've got some new staff and got some temporary admin assistants in our office that'll help manage this a little bit better for us.
Mods Plus, you could lend them.
Vast.
From the outside, but not from the inside. It's still a lot of with stretch tents. Yeah.
Next steps. So, again, there's a lot of good questions, and I think that we do want to share the results of the survey that was done, as soon as it's available to us. We're not going to edit it. It's going to come out in its raw form. We won't summarize. We won't make any assumptions. It's going to be there just for your consumption and review. And then I'd like to hear comments. I'd like some feedback on what it says, how it impacts you. Those are important things for us to know. We need to think about if there are things that have to be done as a result of that. We need to think about timelines, implementation, all those things that could be necessary. And if it's not conclusive, look at other options.
How will you notify people of results?
So I'm going to post them on our website, and then I'm going to send as every email that I've got in our file is going to get a notice that we posted them on our website.
Okay.
We'll also notify the Columbian As a matter of fact, we have a new representative working with us, and we'll be able to ensure that we get a notice into the paper that advises that information's out there, and it's been updated.
At one point, there was supposed to also be a DNR person at this meeting. What happened to him or her?
So we were, the last time we communicated with them, they had advised us that they needed to get through the fire season before they could free anybody up to get over here. Hopefully the fire season is wound down, so we'll ask them again to visit with us. I know that Phil from Clean Air indicated he did want to come and talk to the group, so that would be at our next meeting.
Who was that? Was that
Phil from Clean Air South?
Phil or Paul?
Paul, yes.
Paul, okay. Thank you.
So yeah. When is the next meeting? There was a, you know, May to now is too long.
It is. I agree with that. And it wasn't intentionally this much time between it. We had other forums that we had to do for rural enterprise and a very, very busy summer. So I'd like to think that we can get together within 60 days would be reasonable before the end of the year.
Mitch? I had an observation from the comments that have come up, and I've gotten numerous emails and telephone calls, too, relating to some of the difficulties we've all run into or other people have run into. And one thing that I'm observing is particularly on the agenda, I think we need to do more to involve the overall group and a little less on the informing part. I'm saying balance the two because there are important things that I think need to be put on the agenda, and they need to have access at least to get that information to you so you can consider it.
Okay.
It would really help. And we deeply appreciate what you're doing now, but all of us can improve as we go along.
Mitch, I have a question.
Yes.
So you started off the meeting or shortly into the meeting asking how are we doing with this process? And I've reflected on that some prior to tonight and also during this evening hearing the conversations. And what struck me is that I think it's too soon to know how we're doing. I think that some steps have been taken, how meaningful they are. I think some have value for sure. I mean, you filled a vacant staff. That was crucial. It sounds like Bo has taken some good faith efforts in doing some stuff on his part as the operator. But we still, you know, and I may be missing these things, but, you know, we still have all these elements that we've identified that were part of the conditional use permit. And I thought our task was to look critically at each of those and say, are they in compliance or not? And if they are, then the operator is doing due diligence and following by the letter of the law, which may or may not be the case. And then, you know, once we determine that, then the question will be, well, things still aren't working. And so then we're going to have some tough choices to make about somehow regaining entry into the CUP and making modifications. Or something has to happen because if they are compliant, it's not working. It's not working, and therefore the county really has failed the citizens of the northern part of the county. And so it'll be interesting to see. But the first step, I think, is a critical evaluation of the components of the CUP and determining whether or not they're in compliance. But again, that may only reveal that, you know, it'll be getting Bo out of the hot seat, and I think putting the county into the hot seat.
Can I ask, when you say it's not working, what are you in reference to?
Well, I think we've heard at every one of these meetings, Bo, people saying it's too much traffic, okay? It's too much noise. We're not hearing about the blast. There may be sediments coming off the mountain. There's a suite of concerns that citizens have. And so
even if the, and this is just a question to define what's working and what isn't, even if there's high volume of traffic, how is it not working?
How it's not working? Because people have concerns. People moved out to rural Clark County not to have to deal with copious heavy truck traffic. I did not move 29 years ago to my property to be rattled out of my bed by noise from your mine, okay? That's what I'm talking about, and there's many other examples I could cite. So what I'm saying is that it's not working, and it's current mining operations, in my view, are incongruent with other aspects of North Clark County, and something has to get reconciled.
I have a corollary. I mean, I take very seriously what you say, and I understand what you're saying because you're permitted to do certain things. I think we ought to have a hearing examiner sitting here, not to go over the CUP, but to talk about what the hearing examiner, get Joe Turner, one of these guys that, you know, they're well-spoken, smart guys, get them in here and say, what is it that you feel you are obligated to reflect in your hearing examiner decision that results in a CUP? That's one of the problems. We've, you know, everything, all these decisions, CUPs, not just for quarries, have all been decided by three guys, one of whom's gone, right? There are only two of them left. And, you know, our lives are impacted by what they decide. Bo's company, is his well-being is impacted by what they decide. And we have no idea how they conceive of what their obligations are. The two CUPs for Livingston Mountain Quarry and Livingston Quarry are at odds with each other. They're not self-referential. One was done in 2007, one was done in 2009. The 2009 one didn't reflect, I mean, doesn't mesh up. And we need to get the CUP process fixed. I'd say there's a good goal, is to figure out what it is that it's protecting, what's a legitimate thing to protect, what's a legitimate thing to be permitted, and so Bo understands what the lines are that he's got to stay inside. It's not fair to the industry to be ambiguous. And we shouldn't be here saying, you know, do we have to put up with this or do we have to put up with that? Or it's changed. The other thing, I go back to what I said before, there's no sunset provision in a CUP. So, and it's one of the issues about Bo coming in and asking for the CUP to be considered now for the however many acres it is down there that's got the easement on it, coming in now, because the community says, well, you get the CUP now, it's not going to reflect the conditions in 10 years. So how is that fair to the community? Bo's saying, I got to do it because it might take me that long to get through the damn process. So, I mean, there's built-in tension in the system, and there's always going to be tension in the system, and there are going to be a lot of people say, I just don't want a quarry. But the fact is, there are going to be quarries. Quarries are permitted activities under certain circumstances. And once they're permitted, the people that are issuing those permits, and in this case the hearing examiners, we ought to understand how they think about this process and what they see their limits, and we ought to write the rules and regulations for those permits so we don't have all these ambiguities. We can sit here and argue about what's happened historically. The only thing we can really do in a positive way is to say, here are issues that have come up. Let's get the goalposts put in a place where we all understand where they are.
Great suggestions. So let's invite Joe Turner. I think that's a great idea. Talking about quasi-judicial process and how he makes his decisions.
I mean, there are a lot of people in this room really unhappy with his decision, you know.
True.
Whatever. But he's a smart guy. I think everybody will accept that he's a smart guy. He's quick on his feet. He understood the material. He knew what he'd read. And I think he has, you know, in his mind a framework about what he's authorized to do and what he's required to do. That's the way he looks at it. And I think it would be good for all of us to understand how he sees that.
That basic understanding is a starting point. If we're going to look at a CUP process and evaluate its performance and look at the metrics and the operation, I mean, those are valid things to look at. Having a way to measure that, we have to have a fundamental understanding of how those decisions are made and how they're weighted, how they're valued. That's an important aspect of that.
I'd hate to see us lose total, what Charlie's point was too, though, is that, yeah, you can have the hearing examiner, you can do all this fancy stuff. There's nobody yet stepping up and saying, you know, we're going to try to take better care of the people that are living with this crap. I mean, for lack of a better term. I mean, we've been coming to these meetings. All that's good and wonderful. And it's nice that some things have happened. Tarping, you know, terrific. Notification. But still, you know, there's 7,500 people that live within 2 miles of the Yakult Mountain Quarry, and I'll bet you can't find 15 of them that are glad about its impact on their lives. And they don't, they're not getting any sympathy in their mind. They're not getting any representation in the county councils, you know, within county government. And they just feel damn left out and mad. And that, you know, the meetings so far have not resolved any of that.
I would, Charlie said something smart. I remember it from the last meeting that I attended. And I'm going to try to paraphrase it. He said that up until about 3 years ago, there's been kind of a peace between the operation and those who lived in the vicinity. And something has changed such that, well, my granddaughter can't move her horse across Gabriel Road because there isn't enough time between truckloads. So she used to go over to a trail. The horse owner says, not anymore. We're going to have to trailer the horses and take them elsewhere. It's just not safe anymore. So what Dick said, the neighbors are not trying to just be a pain in the butt to you. They have legitimate concerns, health concerns, safety concerns, and something has changed in the last 3 years to make that worse. We just need to do something, and we need to build some trust between each other and with you. And so far, that isn't making great strides either.
Well, and I've admitted all along to Charlie's observation that it has changed. I mean, a lot of logging has been done in between the pit and Charlie's residence. There has been an increase in demand at the quarry for reasons out of my control, but things have changed. The growth in the county has spiked in the last 3 years, and the aggregate supply has a lot to do with the possibility for that growth. So to point to two major things that have changed in the last 3 years, those would be the two most impactful.
Isn't Clark County supposed to be looking for alternatives, travel alternatives? Isn't that on your plate?
I'm not aware of it. So.
We understood at council meetings that it was the county's responsibility to find and identify.
They have to identify and protect the potential resources, and that's what the surface mining overlay does, is it identifies areas that have the potential to bear gravel, but they don't have any obligation to physically find the rock pits themselves.
Does that bother anybody else that we're single sourcing our rock resource? You know, like, I have an economics background, and monopolies don't work for anybody except the monopolist. How is this going to get any better if Clark County doesn't develop any more gravel resources, any more rock resources? If everything is going to come out of Yakult Mountain, then this is only going to get worse for all of us.
Example. So we have an agency in the state called the Department of Natural Resources. Everyone knows Hillary Franz. She's got one of the world's great social media outreach programs. She's there every day or every other day, you know, getting support for DNR. DNR lives off trees. What do you need to build houses? You need rock and you need trees. Well, DNR has a massive program to support the logging industry, right? They build roads all over the state of Washington. They're timber roads. Lots of us have property with timber roads on them or abutting us, easements going across our properties. DNR, like I said, the State Scientific School Trust that happens to own the Livingston Mountain assets, owns 100,000 acres of land. Most of that's mineral land, and that's how it's described on the state assets. DNR is not building roads to get access to those mineral resources out in the, I don't have a state map here, but out in the boondocks of the state. And, you know, Bo will argue that transportation is the biggest cost in the industry, and I understand that. But you could find rock assets in places where there weren't burgeoning neighborhoods and build serious transportation corridors there and get at it. You just got to get on DNR to start getting access to that resource. It's the Department of Natural Resources. Natural resources is not only trees. And I'm not saying we ought to mine the heck out of all of the state of Washington, but they've got 3 million acres of land in trust that's got mineral assets on it. They were given to the state of Washington an awful lot of it at the time of statehood with the intention, the specific intention in the Establishment Act, the federal act that established the state, to have use of the minerals and the timber. And that's why all the mineral resources are reserved on state land. The state can't get rid of that because the federal government said, we're giving you this land to build a state. They gave them 200,000 acres to build a capital. They gave them 100,000 acres to build a scientific university. They gave them however many 100,000 acres to build a K-12 school system. They didn't just say, we're giving you the trees. They said, we're giving you the natural resources. And by the way, if you sell the surface property, you got to keep the minerals because the minerals are an asset that we, the federal government, we, the rest of the United States, are giving to the state of Washington to give you resources to establish a state. And the Department of Natural Resources is not making those minerals available. 100,000 acres, 100 years, they've not made a dime on the state scientific school mineral properties. It's not the county's response. County's broke.
They have to map the areas.
Well, they have responsibility.
With GMA.
But under GMA, they go to the DNR maps and say, wherever you mine rock resources, right?
It's state geology.
State geology.
It's not even defining them. It's showing the likelihood of existence there. Because we've gone on DNR mapping, and we've drilled holes 200 feet deep, and there's nothing there. You know, so it shows the likelihood that it exists.
There's a state geological map of deposits.
Yes, that
has been done primarily by the U.S. Geological.
They haven't drilled those.
No, they haven't been explored.
That's what I'm saying. Even though it's mapped, doesn't mean it's there. It just shows a likelihood that it should be there or has a potential to be there.
My point is the county is broke. I'm not saying that in a derogatory way. I'm just saying as a matter of fact. I mean, I sit in this room as often as you guys sit here, and you know, that's what the county manager tells us. You know, you all are cutting positions and saving money every way you can, eking out a little money to pay your new inspector over here. But the fact is the county's broke. The county's not going to do it. It doesn't have the resources. DNR has a responsibility for the state to make those assets available. And, you know, they get Livingston Quarry. They got $1.25 a ton. The county got a nickel a ton. Where'd that money go? It went into the state K-12 school thing because trust, because that's that property's designated beneficiary. They've got similar minerals all over the place that could keep the industry going, could sustain growth. Look at other places in Canada, on Vancouver Island, on the bone I talked about the other day, on the backside of Vancouver Island in Canada, there's one of the world's largest aggregate quarries up there, and they barge it all over the West Coast and all through, and they ship it all through Canada. We need to find some places like that that will support the industry, will make the asset available to the building trades, will sustain the economy, and will keep the truckloads off Gabriel Road and off of Lucia Falls Road and all those places. They need to be there. And the thing you said is really important. One of the commonalities between Yakult and Livingston community got up in arms in 2016, 2017, when the truck counts went way off the meter. And that's why we're organized, and that's why we've been so vocal, and we're paying the ass to these guys. Because the truck, if they all hadn't run so many trucks, we probably wouldn't have gotten organized. And what's happened is, and Bo pointed out the other day, really interesting, you know, it's gone from Fisher Quarry. You know, the assets have been depleted working off the plane up to the hills, and now they're working their way past Livingston. Livingston's finished. I mean, if it's a year
that's
or whatever,
where?
It's done. But it's not there. I mean, Yakult is not the answer for the future of Clark County. The people sitting at that panel up there, just approved putting, I don't know, however many houses, 4,000 more houses or whatever on 179th Street. Yeah, that's a boatload, literally a boatload of gravel. Is that all going to come out of Yakult? I mean, that's a problem.
Yeah, yes, it is a problem.
Yeah, but the county doesn't own land to give the industry to mine that stuff in other places, and we can't expect Mitch and Ahmad and others in the county, and Oliver, to use their departments to go out and find rock for Bo's family to mine. You know, that's not how this works.
But the commissioners and the councilors, and I was on the first committee, you know, 10, 12, 14 years ago, the same thing that we're doing now, have said over and over again, we should be advocates for exploration and urge different groups and push on the DNR, push on the different departments in the governor's office. And we're not doing it, and as even this summer, the current council admitted that. But we need some action now, not just some good, thoughtful words with no follow-up. It's time to get going on this.
I mean, there's a non-existent relationship between Clark County managers, mostly people that sit up on those chairs, not so much these fellows, and DNR. I have a better relationship. DNR is really angry with me. The people in the county get pissed at me, but the people in DNR really don't like me. They actually have a special committee that has to meet to send me a letter or an email back that has to be approved by the Attorney General's office now. I got the email showing that they've got to do that because I've been in their knickers so much about what they haven't been doing. But the fact is there's no working relationship between the county and DNR. There's certainly no planning relationship between the county and DNR, and there should be. The GMA is this, like, legislative interface between the county development and the state. It's got to be people that talk to each other and figure out where these resources are going to come from. And
along those lines, I'd like to hear from our most recent guest here. But thank you, Greg.
Yeah, I would simply say that I think this has accomplished a great deal. The surface mining effort has already, and I think it's the beginning of a lot to come. We definitely need to open up more capacity so we don't put such burdens on one particular quarry. I think that is a great observation. And when you put that much pressure on one and you have as much development as we have in our area, it's a recipe for frustration. When this began, this felt to me, as an observer, like a witch hunt on Stordal. And what I found is in listening is a company that's working very hard to be responsible to the point where they're investing their own dollars to put tarps on where they don't have to. It's not on every trip. Bo said that three times now, and I think on three different meetings he's explained that and offered it up. That's no small measure. I don't see any smoking gun on trip counts that they're exceeding anything or breaking any rules or defying anything here. I think we have a responsible operator trying to do the right thing with the business that he's in. And yes, there's neighborhood issues, and I think the overburden, it sounds to me, as fast as we can get that overburden to cover some of the tree logging area that's making all of that noise.
That's some of the dust is coming from.
If you'll allow me, thank you.
I apologize.
I'm sorry.
We don't know who you are.
Oh, I
apologize.
Yeah, you keep interrupting me. I'll go ahead. Thank you.
I'd like to know also who we're listening to.
Yeah, you're listening to Ron Arp. Thank you.
Ron.
Yeah, I'm on the sign-up sheet like you are. So, yeah.
Okay.
So,
we all introduced ourselves.
And I'm on the sign-up sheet. Thank you. So just to continue, some of these issues, I think if we could get that overburden moved, it sounds to me like that would mitigate some of the issues that we're facing where the timber area has been removed, and could potentially be part of the solution here. Obviously, that's got a conditional use permit process to go through, and I think through that exercise you'll find out whether there are any dust issues or mitigating circumstances that need to be addressed. But it could very well be part of the solution in the short term to help deal with that. So I think you're making great progress. There's a study on the
on the dust issues that we've heard about, the potentially threatening dust issues, and we've already heard if in fact that there is that, which we don't believe there will be, but if there is, the operators already suggested some initial steps that could potentially mitigate that. So we're moving in the right direction here, and I want to compliment the people who are trying to drive this conversation. There's a lot of emotion in it, as we've seen again this evening, and a lot of built-up anxiety. But the truth is, I see a whole lot of people trying to do the right thing here. So I hope we can take a deep breath and keep moving in that direction.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Do you have a card? So, what we're going to do, just to follow up and close this out, is improve our communication, make sure our email list is updated, nail down our next visitor, and focus on the CUP process, starting with the hearing examiner to talk about the quasi-judicial decision-making as it applies to quarry CUPs. And we're also going to work on getting that report from our Southwest Washington Clean Air and have that as a topic of discussion on the next meeting. We'll get together within 60 days, hopefully sooner than that, before people start leaving on vacation for the holidays. But thank you all very much. It's good to see you all again. And I concur with Mr. Arvin that we are moving forward. And I know it's not at the speed sometimes as people wish it was, but we're doing everything we can within the resourcing that we have to do what we can. So continue with your communication to us, and we'll do everything we can to be responsive. Thank you.
They all got tired. No,
can I talk to you?
Sure.